We begin with an American tragedy that is largely hidden. Brianna Hammond was in the second grade when she was first strapped into a chair, bolted to the floor, and then placed in seclusion. Now in her late 20s, Brianna told her story with the help of a speech-generating device. Hers was one of five testimonials recorded at a 2012 summit and used in the new film, Restraint and Seclusion. Here are stories.
I crawled out of there. She came back and screamed at me. If you don't stay in there, I'm going to strap you in that chair and lock the door.
He slammed me up against the wall, arm-barred me across the throat and lifted up so I couldn't breathe, and then whispered, "How am I supposed to talk to you nice and slow so you can understand?"
One particular day, we went to see my son, and we were going to give him a haircut. So we took off his shirt, and he was covered with bruises and abrasions everywhere.
Brianna Hammond, Helena Stevenson, and Will Bowden there from the film directed by Dan Habib, former photo editor for the Concord Monitor and now filmmaker in residence at the Institute on Disability at the University of New Hampshire. Dan, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
So let's start by acknowledging that restraint and seclusion in schools and facilities is not something that people hear a lot about. In fact, it's quite hidden in many cases. Can you define for us what constitutes restraint and seclusion?
Sure. Because of my background in journalism, when I get asked to do a film like this, and I was actually asked to do this film by SAMHSA, which is the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, I look into it and I say, well, why are people concerned about this? What's the issue? So the first thing is just defining restraint and seclusion. So restraint, as some of you may, your listeners may imagine, would be physically restraining or in some cases actually tying down a child or an adult if they're perhaps in a facility that serves adults. Seclusion would be putting a child in a school in a seclusion room, in a room that is usually locked from the outside and there's really no way for them to leave. Those sound like horrible things to do to a child, and I'm sure any parent or a grandparent would be horrified to hear that that happened to their child. Unfortunately, it's happening all over the country every day.
Many of these kids may be on the autism spectrum. They may have some learning disabilities, severe physical or mental handicaps. Are there laws restricting or maybe governing the practice of restraint?
Well, that's really at the heart of the issue. Unfortunately, there is no federal law that restricts this. In fact, there are greater protections for inmates in prison than there are for kids in schools around restraint and seclusion. New Hampshire has very strong laws around restraint, but very weak laws around seclusion. Mm. So you find that it varies state to state dramatically. The problem is that there's no consistency around the country for how this is enforced.
And Dan, I know a couple of people who have worked or do work with severely emotionally or physically disabled kids who do restrain them to keep them safe in some cases or
right.
from flailing around and hurting another kid. So when is it necessary? And how are school employees or for people who work at these facilities able to know the difference?
Right. Well, the first thing for us to think about is that this is a very serious incident when a kid is restrained or secluded. It can result in severe psychological trauma, not just for the kid, but for the adult involved. It can involve very significant physical ramifications, including death. And there have been many, many kids who have died of restraint around the country. So I think that the key is to say we need to take this extremely seriously, and we need to use restraint in the most rare circumstances. None of the legislation at the state or federal level says restraint needs to be banned. It says it should only be used when there's immediate threat to an individual or others. Unfortunately, in many cases around the country, particularly, restraint is being used to protect property or around disobedience, noncompliance. So it's being used quite liberally. And when you have a seclusion room, you're going to use it. So some of the legislation that's being proposed, particularly out of the U.S. Senate, would ban seclusion rooms because you can keep a child safe in many, many ways. And the important thing is if there are greater restrictions on use of restraint and seclusion, you find creative ways to keep kids' behavior from ever escalating to that point. Mm. And particularly kids who, as you said earlier, have emotional behavioral disabilities or communication disorders, those kids are restrained and secluded much more often than kids without disabilities. In fact, a federal study just out of the Department of Education last year found that even though kids with disabilities represented 12% of the kids in the study, 70% of the kids who were restrained had disabilities. Mm. So there's great disproportionality around restraint and seclusion for kids with disabilities.
In the film, we hear from several people who are speaking at the 2012 TASH conference. This is in California, where students and parents give testimonials. Will Bowden, in this case, his son, Andre, is nonverbal. He's, what, 17 now or 15?
He's actually in his early 20s now, but at the time of the restraint that he talks about, he was 15.
Now, here's Will talking about how being nonverbal can manifest physically.
I can only imagine what it's like, even one day, to need or want something and to try to get that across to somebody and be unsuccessful. And so if you're unsuccessful enough times, you start to get aggravated. And then if you get aggravated enough and people are still not responding, it just gets, you know, it cycles higher and higher. And before you know it, you know, my son will just like lash out at you and say, not verbally, but with his body language, pay attention to what I'm trying to tell you or show you.
Will Bowden there from the film Restraint and Seclusion. Hear our stories from filmmaker Dan Habib. Dan is with us. And Will's son was severely bruised and traumatized by being placed in restraints. But Will does say that he and his wife could no longer handle him, you know, as he was growing older and getting frustrated in the way that he just talked about. So he was placed in a hospital where he ended up in restraints in emergency situations, which Will seems to understand as an occasional necessity. So what happened to Andre afterwards?
Well, when you look at institutions that are very progressive and that can serve kids who have significant behavioral issues, they find ways to do everything possible to avoid getting to a point where restraint may be necessary to protect that individual or individuals around them. So in the case of Andre, as Will says in the film, for years he was served by very progressive and well-run institutions, and Andre had maybe one or two incidents where he escalated to the point where he needed to be restrained. Then within 3 months, he was restrained 30 times in this other institution. And then he came out, and in the 5 or 6 years since then, maybe once or twice. Mm-hmm. So the point is, it's not the kid, it's the institution, and it's the approaches that are used at each institution or school. One of the big challenges around the national issues on restraint and seclusion is that parents don't always need to be notified. Mm-hmm. So in many cases, like in Will and Andre's case, he never knew about those restraints that were happening. And this is a very personal issue for me because, like Will's son Andre, my son Samuel has cerebral palsy and has trouble speaking. And for kids who are nonverbal or have trouble speaking, behavior sometimes is the only way they can communicate. New Hampshire has a law where a parent needs to be notified within 24 hours, which is still, for me as a parent, feels like too long. But that's at the federal level, that's what's being looked at as legislation.
In fact, they figured it out when they saw his body covered with bruises.
Right. I mean, and I think people need to put themselves in the position of these families and not think this is the other. I mean, any kid potentially could have something go on in their life, whether it's neurologically or chemically or environmentally, that causes them to have challenging behavior. And if schools aren't doing everything they can to implement practices like positive behavioral supports, where you're using positive incentives to do the right thing, or trying to really figure out psychologically what's going on for a kid, you have to put all those positive approaches in place first before you ever want to consider something like restraint or seclusion.
We hear, in fact, from a 12-year-old kid who never learned to read or write. As he would put it, he was just abused when he was in school. And then a woman named Peyton Goddard, who was for years restrained, physically abused, and molested. Here's a little bit of her story as read by her mother.
In years of private placements, aversive interventions permeated I. It was power overt on I, and I was septic pointed to seclusion. It was brooded power gyred by purses wrongfully called teachers trying to beat I. This war wasted my rest. The sweet in I evaporated out. Massed frets.
The sweet and I evaporated out. Mm. It is just heartbreaking.
Peyton's writing is unbelievable. And this is, as you said, a young woman who was in self-contained classrooms for 2 decades, who was abused, molested. Her parents didn't know what was going on, unfortunately. They tried their best to advocate for her. And it wasn't until she got some access to communication technology and was able to type that she was able to express herself and advocate for herself. And at the end of the film, we put a scene in from her graduation from college. She actually was the valedictorian of her community college after undergoing 2 decades of that kind of abuse. It's just, it's a very painful topic, but I really wanted to create some hope at the end that if students have the right supports and the right communication opportunities, they can be successful, all students.
Well, this is something that you can do as a filmmaker. I mean, for a long time, you were a photo editor for a newspaper. Now, you've kind of crossed over to filmmaking after making a couple of different films. How is documentary different than the journalistic format? I mean, you don't really have to get the other side necessarily. You hear these stories.
Yeah. I mean, my film, Including Samuel, which has been used all over the world for inclusive education, does feature a lot of different perspectives. And it really looks at inclusion from the journalistic perspective, but also a personal perspective of me as a father of Samuel. And my new film, Who Cares About Kelsey, which is going to be broadcast nationally on public television in the fall, also has a lot of different voices. In this case, I wanted to just let these individuals speak their stories. And restraint and seclusion is a very complicated issue, and there's a lot of research and studies and debate going on. But I just felt it was important to give students a voice. And a lot of my work in journalism was really just letting people have a voice.
And several of the people who are in the film have become advocates, they or their families, in some way against this kind of, you know, what some even call torture against kids.
Yeah, many have helped pass laws in their own states. These are people from all over the country. Actually, the night we had the premiere in Washington a couple of weeks ago in Washington, D.C., we were out on Capitol Hill visiting with our congressional delegations, and they were educating them about this issue and looking for sponsorship from different legislators. But it's difficult politically because you find that particularly around the Republican side, they want to minimize federal regulation over states. And Democrats are generally more willing to say, this is something we need to protect kids. We have to protect kids, even if it means having federal legislation. So there is that tension between state and federal control that enters into this debate.
Well, and there's also school budgets. I mean, not having a seclusion room is a way to sort of put kids who are making trouble away rather than interacting or engaging them, which takes time, money, and attention.
Yeah, I mean, all the research has suggested there's no cost savings in using these techniques. If anything, you're creating the kind of psychological trauma, physical trauma, you know, high rates of dropout, high rates of mental health issues that will cost society both now and in the future. And really, I mean, some things just supersede cost discussions. And this is a human rights issue. And people need to be treated with dignity and respect and have their psychological health intact.
Dan Habib, former photo editor for the Concord Monitor, now filmmaker in residence at the Institute on Disability at UNH. His new film is Restraint and Seclusion. Here are stories. Dan, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
The film Restraint and Seclusion, Here Are Stories, is available to watch for free online. There's also a screening and discussion on July 30th in Manchester at a conference hosted by the National Center on Inclusive Education. You can find more information about the event and a link to view the film at wordofmouthradio.org. Stay with us for a decidedly updated approach to disability. We're going to talk to the creator of Open Dyslexic. That's an open source computer font designed to help people with dyslexia have an easier time reading. Stay with us for that story, but also a programming note today. This is our last live broadcast at noon. Starting on Monday, July the 1st, we'll be on at 2 o'clock. So if you're used to word of mouth as your lunchtime companion, maybe start to think of it as an afternoon pick-me-up. If you're wondering about these programming changes, we do have a blog post from our program director, which tells you more about what's upcoming at New Hampshire Public Radio. We'll be back with more word of mouth in just a minute.